Assassin. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into things, I just dropped the first single today, I Do This For Me, off of my 7th solo album, Suck My Dick, that is coming out on April 6th. So you can check that out on my official website, katietrop.net. Also on my website, if you go to katietrop.net, hit on the Sports Talk with Trop tab, and right up at the top there, you will see a banner that says Sports Talk with Trop's preferred sports books. So if you are into sports gambling, you can take a look at whatever my preferred sports books are and what I suggest, and sign up for them and gamble your life away. But let's get right into the week of the NBA. We had some games this week. Luka Doncic had yet another triple-double on Monday night. It wasn't a 30-point triple-double this time around, but it was still a triple-double in a Dallas Mavericks win over the Chicago Bulls, 127-92. Luka had 27 points, 12 rebounds, and 14 assists. Unfortunately, he did get hurt on Wednesday night, or maybe it was last night, Thursday. Regardless, he did get injured later on in the week, a hamstring injury, so he didn't play last night. It doesn't look like it's going to be anything that is debilitating, but once again, we're about a month out from the NBA playoffs, and the Mavericks are going to need a healthy and productive Luka Doncic to even have a chance in the Western Conference this year, so that sucks to hear, but hey, that's the NBA. Then also on Monday night, the Phoenix Suns took down the Cleveland Cavaliers 117-111. Phoenix was down by 19 points at one point in this game. Kevin Durant dropped 37 points. Devin Booker dropped 27. And Bradley Beal dropped 24. So that's how lethal this team is when they've got a healthy lineup right there. They are going to score some motherfucking points, and they certainly did. And like I said, they were down by 19. I believe in the second quarter, third quarter of this game, and then they just stormed on back and took down the Cleveland Cavaliers. Then also on Monday night, the Denver Nuggets took out the Toronto Raptors 125-119. Denver was down at one point by 21 points in this game, and they were like, fuck no, we're gonna take over. Jokic had, of course, a triple-double, 35 points, 17 rebounds, and 12 assists. So he took over as he normally does, and the Denver Nuggets keep on trucking. They actually took over the lead in the Western Conference, overall Western Conference that night as well. Then on Tuesday night, the Indiana Pacers took out the Oklahoma City Thunder 121-111. Tyrese Halliburton had a double-double with 18 points and 12 assists. Turner had 24 points. Pascal Siakam, he had 18 points and 11 rebounds. So it was just an all-around team game by the Indiana Pacers, and they looked really solid against a really good Oklahoma City Thunder team. Then we had the Sacramento Kings just demolish the Milwaukee Bucks 129-94. De'Aaron Fox had 29 points and 7 assists. Domantas Sabonis had 22 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists. So it was just an all-around dominating game by the Sacramento Kings. When the Kings get their wins, they are blowing people out. But when they get their losses, it's just like, what the fuck is going on here? So I still don't really know what to expect from the Kings, especially once the postseason rolls around. Then on Wednesday night, Denver Nuggets, they just took care of business against the Miami Heat. They won 100-88. Michael Porter Jr. was the guy that night. He had 25 points. Jokic only had a double-double with only 12 points, 14 rebounds, and 6 assists. So very mediocre night from Nikola Jokic. What the hell, man? You're supposed to score a triple-double every night, dude. What the fuck is that? You can't let your team's Michael Porter Jr. outscore you like that. What the fuck? Just kidding. That just goes to show you how deep the Denver Nuggets are, and they are getting hot right now. They are, you know, I've been looking at them over the last couple of months and thinking to myself, this team is just getting stronger and stronger as the season wears on. They're getting hot at the right time. I don't know, man. Denver Nuggets looking like they're about to repeat here. Now, obviously, it depends on what matchups happen here. But at this point, I don't know. Denver is looking like they can truck on through anybody. And they've got the championship pedigree now to help pull them on through the NBA playoffs. But we'll see what happens this weekend with the rest of what goes on in the NBA. Then, of course, free agency frenzy continues on through the week. It has slowed down just a little bit, but this is what, let's catch you up with the notable shakeups throughout the week. We had Aaron Jones, of course, was released by the Green Bay Packers, on Sunday, Monday, and he then immediately just gets signed by the arch rival Minnesota Vikings, so we'll see what happens there, but Aaron Jones, I feel like, was completely calculated with that pick because now he's going to be facing off against the Green Bay Packers twice a year. So we'll see what kind of games he has for the Green Bay Packers for letting him go. Then Houston Texans ended up trading for running back Joe Mixon from the Cincinnati Bengals. So Houston's really just loading up right now in the offseason, both offensively and defensively, making some good moves. Then running back Derrick Henry ended up signing with the Baltimore Ravens. Big move right there. They already are the number one rushing team in the league. And now here they are adding in one of the best running backs in the league. And I have a feeling the Baltimore Ravens are going to be a damn good team this coming season. I mean, they're already a good team. Adding in a prime time playmaker like Derrick Henry, I think that puts them right up there in the championship talk. And then Patrick Queen, who was with the Baltimore Ravens, ends up signing with the rival Pittsburgh Steelers. So we'll see how that goes. But Patrick Queen is a beast motherfucker. And now you pair him up with TJ Watt. Whoo, this Pittsburgh Steelers defense is going to be damn good headed into this season. Then wide receiver Keenan Allen, the Los Angeles Chargers ended up trading him to the Chicago Bears. So the Bears are actually starting to load up on some weapons here. We'll see what happens come draft time. Of course, they still have the number one overall pick, still looking like it's going to be Caleb Williams. And Keenan Allen adds in a huge weapon for the Chicago Bears there because Keenan Allen is one of the most consistent wide receivers in the league. And he can make some big plays down the field. So we'll see what he's got. And then just breaking news today, defensive tackle Aaron Donald of the Los Angeles Rams has announced he is retiring after 10 seasons in the NFL. He is a three-time Defensive Player of the Year. He is by far one of the greatest defensive tackles we have ever seen in this league. Dude dominated from the day he was drafted. They built this team around him. They ended up winning a Super Bowl while he was there. And he's been contemplating retirement really ever since they won that Super Bowl. That year they won the Super Bowl, before the season began, he was kind of contemplating it then. And the last couple of seasons, it's really been, is he going to stay on? He did stay on last year because there was a huge talk that he was going to retire because he did, you know, he did win the Super Bowl the year before, but he ended up coming back for another one and just announced his retirement today. So I couldn't do like a list about him. Maybe I will next week or in the future, but regardless, this is a future first ballot Hall of Famer, 100%. Totally enjoyed the dude's career, mad ass respect. And all I've got to say is, for his wifey, could you please not let him lose that hot-ass body he's got going on? Because that's all I got to say about Aaron Donald. That dude is a fine-ass motherfucker without that shirt on. So I'm just hoping his wife tells him to keep his ass in shape at least. I don't expect him to be in NFL shape, but that dude is a fine-ass motherfucker with his shirt off. And he should at least keep it looking pretty clean for a little while, because he's a fine-ass motherfucker. That's all I got to say about that. Moving on to the conference championships this weekend for college basketball, we have some matchups. We actually just had a big upset happen just right now, right before I started recording the show. We'll get to it when we get to it, but let's first start off with right now, the Big 12 conference championship. They are at the semifinals right now. It's going to be Texas Tech versus Houston tonight and Iowa State versus Baylor. I have Houston, of course, taking out Texas Tech and Baylor taking out Iowa State. That was a tough one for me to go back and forth with just because Iowa State is on fire right now, but Baylor is just too good of a team in my opinion. So I've got Houston facing off against Baylor. and then for the championship. And then I have Houston taking it because Houston's been one of the most dominating teams in college basketball this season, and they just look poised and ready to make a championship run. Then the Big East tournament right now in the semifinals, it's St. John's versus UConn and Providence versus Marquette. I have UConn and Marquette moving on for the championship round, and then I have UConn winning it just because, like I said, UConn is basically just like Houston, one of the top teams in the league, and I feel like they're just ready to make a run, whereas Marquette, they've been really good this season, but the last couple of weeks, not too good so far. So, I mean, just, you don't want to be falling apart at this point in the season, and so I have UConn taking the Big East championship. Then the ACC tournament right now, their semifinals looking like North Carolina versus Pitt and NC State versus Virginia. I have UNC and Virginia moving on, and I have North Carolina winning the ACC championship. Then the Pac-12 championship, their semifinals are Arizona versus Oregon and Washington State versus Colorado. I have Arizona and Washington State moving on in the championship round, and then I have Arizona winning it all just because Arizona has been a really solid team, especially in the Pac-12. So I have them winning the Pac-12 championship. Then the SEC tournament, they are actually only in their quarterfinals, so they have quarterfinals today, semifinals tomorrow, and then the championship on Sunday. Right now, the quarterfinals look like this. Missouri State actually just took out Tennessee in upset fashion by like 10 points, too. So Tennessee is out of there. South Carolina takes on Auburn. Texas A&M takes on Kentucky, and then Florida takes on Alabama. I actually had Tennessee moving on, so I was wrong about that. I have Auburn moving on, Kentucky moving on, and then Alabama moving on. And then my championship, I was going to have as Tennessee versus Kentucky, but obviously that's not going to happen. But regardless, it doesn't matter because I actually had Kentucky winning the SEC championship because they are really, really hot right now. And I just got to go with the hot hand in that one. And then last but not least, we have the Big Ten championship. They are also in their quarterfinals today, semifinals tomorrow, championship on Sunday. We have Michigan State versus Purdue, Wisconsin versus Northwestern, Ohio State versus Illinois, and then Indiana versus Nebraska. I have Purdue, Northwestern, Illinois, and Indiana moving on. And then my championship I have as Purdue versus Illinois, and then I just have Purdue as the championship just because there has been no more consistent team in college basketball than the Purdue Boilermakers. And I don't know how my bracket's going to go, but I have a feeling Purdue could potentially be one of my championship picks. But we'll see, because brackets, we'll be talking brackets on Monday. How fucking crazy is that, and how fucking awesome is that? March Madness is next weekend. That is what we're going to be talking about, and I can't fucking wait. All right, now let's get into the top 10 list this week. Over the last couple of weeks, I did the GOATs, the top 10 NFL GOATs from the 1960s 2 weeks ago, and then I did the top 10 NFL GOATs from the 1970s last week. So this week, we are doing the top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, and let me tell you, this list was very difficult for me to whittle down. Some of the guys I had to leave out, I'm like, fuck, I couldn't believe I had to leave you out. But you know what? You can't include everybody. And now my top three, easy. Right off the bat, I knew exactly who I was putting at number one. And then I knew who I was putting right behind them at two and three. Just because number one, the 80s was dominated by one player and one player alone. And when I get to number one, there are zero arguments of what player dominated the NFL in the 1980s. If you know, you know. And if you have any arguments against it, you are el stupido, in my opinion. So let's get started with my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, beginning with number 10. I cannot believe I put him at number 10. That's how fucking good this list is. He is so far down. I was like, whoa, this is almost disrespectful, but that's how good the players were in the 80s, and that is Mike Singletary, linebacker of the Chicago Bears. He played for the Bears from 1981 to 1992, and literally no defender dominated the league like this motherfucker did. Now, you could argue for a few different defenders on this Chicago Bears, legendary Chicago Bears defense, but I had to go with Singletary. I mean, nobody dominated the 80s like he did. I mean, they won Super Bowl 20 in 1985. Obviously, the 85 Bears, one of the most legendary defenses ever, arguably one of the greatest defenses of ever. But listen to his stat, Mike Singletary's stat line alone in 1985. He had 109 tackles, 3 sacks, 1 interception, 3 fumble returns, and 1 forced fumble. The guy was everywhere, in on every single play, pretty much throughout his entire career. He was a 2-time defensive MVP, or a 2-time defensive player of the year in 85 and 88, 7-time first team All-Pro from 84 to 89, straight, and then in 1991. His career stats are 1,488 tackles, 7 interceptions, 12 fumble returns, and 19 sacks on his career. And like I said, nobody dominated defense like this guy. I mean, still to this day, you look at Mike Singletary, and that is just the prototypical linebacker. He was in on every play. He was the Mike. He was the guy you go to on defense who just knows everything, who knows where every play is going to be. And he was perfect to take over for Dick Butkus, too. It's like you go from Dick Butkus to Mike fucking Singletary. And like I said, this Bears defense was so legendary, it was hard for me to just pick one. But yeah, I had to just pick one because this top 10 was so freaking hard to whittle down. And Mike Singletary, number 10. Number 9 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, John Elway, quarterback of the Denver Broncos. He played from 1983 to 1998. So just so you know, spoiler alert, I am almost positive. 99.9% positive John Elway is going to be on my 1990s GOAT team as well, because honestly, John Elway dominated his entire career. In the 80s, though, he went to 3 Super Bowls. Unfortunately, they lost all 3 of the Super Bowls. But I mean, just to watch John Elway play quarterback, it was just such a beautiful thing to watch. In my opinion, nobody throws a better ball. I could watch John Elway practice throwing a football all fucking day long. Now, in the 80s, he is a 2-time Super Bowl champion, but unfortunately, he didn't win those Super Bowls until the 90s, which is why I'm saying, don't be shocked if we're talking about John Elway again when I go over my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 90s. But in the 80s, he did go to 3 Super Bowls, lost all 3 of those Super Bowls, and they were bad losses, too. They weren't even really good losses. I mean, not that there's a good loss, but they were just ass whoopings. But in the 80s, though, he was, of course, legendary on a couple. What John Elway is known for is his comebacks. You could put him, I don't know, let's use an example of 98 yards to go with 37 seconds left on the clock. It might have been against a team called the Cleveland Browns in the AFC Championship game. John Elway might have driven them down 98 yards in 37 seconds. It's this drive called The Drive. It's so legendary, that's why it's called The Drive. But yeah, John Elway drove 98 yards, 37 seconds, and ripped the hearts of the Cleveland Browns out on the field. He actually has another legendary comeback as well against the Cleveland Browns, where he rips their heart out in another playoff game. But, you know, that's just what he was known for. He was known for his comebacks. He was known for just ripping people's hearts out. He was just that dude who you could not give any time left on the clock, or else you knew there was a good chance he was driving him down the field, which he would almost always do. He did win an MVP in 1987, so that's another reason why he, of course, makes this list. His career statistics are 51,475 passing yards with 300 passing touchdowns, 3,407 rushing yards, and 33 rushing touchdowns. So the guy just was absolutely dominant during the 80s and also during the 90s as well. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, Ronnie Lott, the safety of the San Francisco 49ers. He played with the Niners from 1981 to 1990. He would actually play a few more seasons in the NFL post San Francisco. He would also play for the Jets and I can't remember who else he played for, but he played for a couple other teams. But we all know Ronnie Lott as a San Francisco 49er, and he was one of the most dominating defenders ever. He is a four-time Super Bowl champion. He won all of them with the San Francisco 49ers. He won 16, 19, 23, and 24. And really, when you talk about just dominating defenders, one of the greats. Just one of the greats. Probably the greatest safety ever. His career numbers are 1,146 tackles, 63 interceptions, 16 forced fumbles, 17 fumble returns, and 5 touchdowns. He actually owns an NFL record. In his rookie year, he had 3 interceptions for touchdowns. That's an NFL record still that stands to this day. That just goes to show you he was good from day fucking one and just dominated. Just dominated. You never wanted to throw anywhere near Ronnie Lott, and you never wanted to cross the middle near Ronnie Lott because you want to see somebody light a motherfucker up. His name is Ronnie Lott. He's also known for having his pinky amputated mid-season because he wanted to keep playing. It was either have season-ending surgery or amputate your pinky. The dude chose to amputate his pinky. That is what a badass motherfucker Ronnie Lott is. He was an 8-time first team All-Pro, 1981, 1983, and then 1986, all the way up through 91. He led the league twice in interceptions in 1986 and 1991, and just an all-around badass. And really, it was hard going back and forth between him and Michael Singletary on who was more dominating on defense in the 80s. But I had to give it to Ronnie Lott. There is one person I did put above them who we're going to be talking about next. But I mean, it was hard. It was hard to choose this, but Ronnie Lott and Mike Singletary were just badass motherfuckers on defense and just dominated the 80s. But number 7 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, this is another guy who's probably going to make the 90s list, so just look out for it. And that is Reggie White. Defensive end of the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers. Spent the 80s, though, with the Philadelphia Eagles from 1985 to 1982. And then he, of course, would end his career with the Green Bay Packers. Beginning in 93, he would play with the Packers and, like I said, end his career with them. He would actually win a Super Bowl with the Packers, but we're not talking about his career with the Packers because that's in the 90s. And like I said, don't be shocked if you hear the name Reggie White on the next list. But his career numbers are 198 career sacks, 33 forced fumbles, 3 interceptions, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, really, one of the greatest defenders ever. Just ever. He actually owns an NFL record of consecutive seasons leading the league in sacks. Twice he did that. And then he also has an NFL record of 10-plus sack seasons with 9 10-plus sack seasons. And then also he has an NFL record of who has the most 15-plus sack seasons. He has 5 15-plus sack seasons. So the dude just did nothing but terrorize quarterbacks his entire career. He was Defensive Player of the Year in 1987 and 1998. 8-time first-team All-Pro from 1986 through 1991, also in 95 and 98. And when he led the league in sacks, those 2 consecutive seasons, it was in 1987 and 1988. So really, I had to put him on here in the 80s because I was like, should I only put him on my 90s list? And I was like, well, no, man. Just the way he dominated the 80s was just as equally balanced as when he dominated in the 90s. I mean, Reggie White never fell off. It's hard to even describe if you didn't watch his career what a dominating force Reggie White was. And that's what I'm saying. Like, this list was so fucking hard for me because I'm like, how do I put Mike Singletary at 10 and Ronnie Lott at 8? Hell, John Elway at 9, Reggie White at 7. But see, with Elway, I feel like he dominated the 80s, but he was a winner in the 90s. So that's why it's like I wasn't feeling too bad to put Elway at 9 because he didn't win shit in this era. And, you know, there's a few motherfuckers ahead of him where I'm like, sorry, your Super Bowls and the way you dominated the 80s, I got to put you above Elway. But we'll see where both Elway and Reggie land in the 90s list, because I'm pretty sure I'm putting them on there because they dominated the 90s and 80s equally. And Reggie, like I said, Reggie White never fell off. The dude just knew how to sack the quarterback. He was just so hard to block. Even if he was triple teamed, you still couldn't stop the dude. He was just watch yourself some Reggie White highlights if you gotta. You will not be disappointed watching Reggie White highlights. Then at number six on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, Eric Dickerson, running back of the Los Angeles Rams from 1983 to 1987, and then running back for the Indianapolis Colts from 1987 to 1991. His career statistics: 13,259 rushing yards, 90 rushing touchdowns, 2,137 receiving yards, and 6 receiving touchdowns. He owns an NFL record for the most rushing yards in one season. He has 2,105 rushing yards in one season. His rookie season, he owns the NFL rookie record for most rushing yards with 1,808 yards in his rookie season, y'all. He almost ran for 2,000 yards in his rookie season. And then he also has the most yards in a playoff game with 248 rushing yards in a playoff game. So those are records that still stand to this day. I mean, Eric Dickerson, when I love watching Eric Dickerson run. He just like glides. It is one of the most beautiful sights you will ever watch. And I kind of feel like we don't hear about Eric Dickerson as much because back in the day, he really started having some contract issues with the Los Angeles Rams. And I kind of feel like it was one of those things where the media was bashing him. The front office was bashing him. And then they're like, get the fuck out of here. We're going to send you into Indianapolis. And then he also had some contract issues with them. So I kind of feel like he has a negative point of view with some people. But with me, he does not. Because I was not around in that time. And also, you know me, get your money while you are in the NFL. Or really, if you are an athlete, get your money while you can. Because these owners, these front offices, they give zero fucks about you. And they will get rid of you as soon as they can. And they will make up all the reasons as to why you shouldn't get paid. So to me, I will never ever have an issue with motherfuckers trying to get paid. Now, if you hold out and you have negative things that happen to you after you hold out, like you get injured or you just have an overall bad season, that is on you. But at the same time, you got to get your money, and that's one of the ways you do it is by holding out. And so I kind of feel like Eric Dickerson doesn't get the same accolades as a lot of other running backs do, because I mean, when people talk about Barry Sanders, for example, the dude never won shit. He barely played in any playoff games. And yes, blah, 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 he played for the Detroit Lions. And they didn't put anything around him. But you talk about him like he's a legend, as you should. And nobody really talks about Eric Dickerson in the same light. And I feel like they should. Because he dominated the league. It's just he felt he should get paid. And he should have got paid because he was dominating the league. Like I just said, he almost had 2,000 yards rushing in his rookie season. Nobody does that. But anyways, back to his stats. He was Offensive Player of the Year in 1986, Rookie of the Year in 1983, five-time first-team All-Pro in 83, 84, and then 86 through 88, four-time rushing leader in 83, 84, 86, and 88. So, I mean, all the dude did was run. And he was just so difficult to stop. He was one of the greatest running backs to ever do it. And Eric Dickerson just dominated the 80s like no other. If he had some championships, I feel like a lot more people would discuss him. But I feel like, to me, it doesn't matter. You talk about Barry Sanders. And like I keep saying, you should talk about Barry Sanders, even though he didn't win any Super Bowls or even have a chance at winning a Super Bowl. Eric Dickerson did play in, I know for sure, one Super Bowl. I think just one. He might have played in two. Regardless, I know he played in a Super Bowl and was on the losing end, but the dude just was so lightning and electric, and just watching him run, it was like that was all he was meant to do, was just fucking run that football, and he just dominated at it and was just one of the greatest players of the 1980s. Then at number five on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, Anthony Munoz, offensive tackle of the Cincinnati Bengals. He played from 1980 to 1992. And really, if you're putting together a list of just offensive linemen, it's really hard to argue against Anthony Munoz being at number one. Nobody was more consistent than this dude. He started 182 of the 185 games played. He was really an Iron Man. He really didn't miss a lot of games throughout his career. He was a 9-time first-team All-Pro from 81 to 83 and then 85 to 90. So that's the majority of his career. And he just was so, he was the pinnacle of consistency at the offensive line. And just really nobody dominated the offensive line like he did. And like I said, if you're putting together a list of just offensive linemen, it's hard to argue against him being at number one. Then at number four in my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s, there was only one running back I could put over Eric Dickerson. And I really racked my brain with this one because I want to say the Super Bowl does help, but it was hard for me to put somebody, another running back, over Eric Dickerson, but I did it, and it was Marcus Allen. Running back of the Los Angeles Raiders from 1982 to 1992, and then he also played for the Kansas City Chiefs from 93 to 97. He won Super Bowl 18 with the Raiders and was also the MVP of that Super Bowl and has one of the most insane, memorable runs ever in Super Bowl history. Actually, just one of the greatest Super Bowl performances you will ever see. I can't remember exactly how many yards he had in that Super Bowl, but it was over 200 yards. So that's what kind of a dominating game he had. But I mean, to watch Marcus Allen, to me, really, it was hard. Like I said, hard to choose between him and Dickerson. Because Dickerson was just as electric as Marcus Allen. But to me, Marcus Allen had a few more memorable plays where you're like, whoa. And he just really dominated the 80s to me. And like I said, I feel like for me, him winning the Super Bowl and being a Super Bowl MVP is the only thing that put him above Eric Dickerson to me. Marcus Allen's career stats, 12,243 rushing yards, 123 touchdowns, 5,411 receiving yards, and 21 receiving touchdowns. He was the MVP in 1985, Offensive Player of the Year in 1985, Rookie of the Year in 1982, and just what, if you really want to see some good ass running, Marcus Allen is, it is insane to watch some of the plays this guy made in his career. So fun to watch. And when I was rewatching some of the highlights of him, I'm like, damn, Marcus Allen was that dude. For me, I remember him as a Kansas City Chief because obviously he played for the Chiefs from 93 to 97. So that's really, I was like in third grade in 93. So that's when I really started to watch football, was kind of like in the 1990s. 90, 91, 92, that era, I really, it's starting to, that's when I really started to pay attention and watch and get to know things. So Marcus Allen to me was a Kansas City Chief, but watching him as a Raider, whoa, that guy was just electric and just fantastic. And really, do yourself a favor and watch his performance in Super Bowl 18. That guy was, he literally runs into a wall of defenders and then just turns the fuck around, which you should never do, and then runs up the middle and makes a touchdown. It is one of the most amazing plays, and he actually has quite a few career plays like that. There's one Monday Night Football game where he just has this insane, I think it's a 99-yard touchdown, I believe. I could be wrong. I could be thinking of somebody else, but Marcus Allen was just, boom, fucking phenomenal. Absolutely dominated the 80s, and really difficult for me to rank him above Eric Dickerson. But this bitch did it. All right, we got down to the nitty-gritty right here, guys. Number three on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s. I almost put this guy at number one, but like I said, there was only one player to me that dominated the 80s more so than these next two guys I'm going to discuss, and this is Lawrence Taylor, linebacker of the New York Giants. He played from 1981 to 1993, won two Super Bowls, won Super Bowl 21 and Super Bowl 25 with the Giants, and there is no more feared defender on this planet than Lawrence Taylor. His career numbers are 132.5 sacks, 11 fumble returns, 9 interceptions, and 2 touchdowns. one of the only defensive MVPs ever. He won the MVP in 1986. He won Defensive Player of the Year in 81, 82, and 86. He was Rookie of the Year in 1981. So he was one of those players where he was exceptionally consistent as well, especially in the 80s. I mean, 80s, he was the most feared defender you will ever see on the planet. He was an eight-time first-team All-Pro from 1981 to 86, and then in 88 and 89. So that's how dominating he was in the 80s. Like, boom, you could not stop Lawrence Taylor. Really, he's the only one I could put above Singletary, Lott, and Reggie White. And it was difficult to do that. Lawrence Taylor is just absolute epitome of legendary linebacker. And just the way he dominated, the way he would scare dudes just lining up. So he would force false starts, and motherfuckers would be just shitting their pants just by looking at him because they knew he was going to serve them up some punishment. And really, just no defender really dominated the league more so than Lawrence Taylor in the 80s. And like I said, I almost put him at number one, but it was really difficult to do that because, like I said, there is only one player who dominated the 80s more so than everybody. Now let's get to number two, one of the top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s. I also could have put this guy at number one, but I did not. He's going to make the 90s list. I guarantee you that. So like I said, there are three guys on this list. Do not be shocked if you hear they are on the 90s list as well. Jerry Rice, wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers. He played for the 49ers from 85 to 2000. He would ultimately go on and play for the Raiders for a couple of seasons and then the Seahawks. And just his career would kind of peter out towards the end there. But he is a three-time Super Bowl champion. He won Super Bowl 23, 24, and 29. He was Super Bowl MVP of 23. And I didn't even have enough room on my paper really to write down everything that Jerry Rice has done in his career. But his career numbers are 22,895 receiving yards, 197 touchdowns. And then he owns the NFL record for most receptions with 1,549 receptions. He also has the NFL record for most receiving yards with 22,895. He also has the NFL record for most career playoff receiving yards with 2,245. He also has the NFL record for most 100-plus receiving yard games with 76 100 receiving yard games. He also has the NFL record for most 100-plus yard receiving yard games in the playoffs with 8. He also has the NFL record for most touchdowns with 197 touchdowns. He also has the NFL record for the most playoff receiving touchdowns with 22. He also has the NFL record for the most all-purpose yards with 23,546. He also has the NFL record for most all-purpose yards in the playoffs with 2,289 yards. And then last but not least, he also has the NFL record for most Super Bowl receptions with 33 receptions. Those are just the few NFL records that Jerry Rice owns. He also was a two-time Offensive Player of the Year in 1987 and 1993. And then he was a 10-time first-team All-Pro from 1986 to 1990, and then also from 1992 to 1996. Obviously, nobody dominated like Jerry Rice. Still to this day, I don't think there is a receiver that touches what Jerry Rice did. And watching Jerry Rice highlights, and I'm a Cowboys fan, y'all. I am a Cowboys fan, but guess what? I own a Jerry Rice jersey. I actually wore it on Super Bowl Sunday. I throw it out there every once in a while because I do have quite a few players who don't play for my favorite team's jerseys because I just respect the game. And Jerry Rice, I love Jerry Rice. I don't care. I don't care how much he would torch the Cowboys up. He was so fun to watch. He was just a beautiful receiver just to watch him. Just the routes he would run, the way he was just a fantastic receiver. And I am privileged to have watched this motherfucker light up the Cowboys on numerous occasions. But guess what? The Cowboys kicked his ass a couple of times as well. But Jerry Rice was a bad motherfucker, and I feel sorry for you motherfuckers who did not get to watch the career of Jerry Rice because he was fantastic, and it was hard for me to not put him at number one. But like I said, Nobody dominated the 1980s more than number one on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s. Who do you think it is? I don't know. Could it be Joe Montana, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers? Yeah, it is. He played for the San Francisco 49ers from 1979 to 1992, and then he would have a brief stint with the Kansas City Chiefs at the end of his career. But I will repeat, nobody dominated the 1980s like Joe Montana did. It was the easy, when I thought of this list, I said, Joe Montana, number one. There wasn't even a question. There wasn't even a thought. Like I said, I debated on whether I was going to put LT there. I debated on Jerry Rice, but you know what? Nobody dominated in the 1980s like Joe Montana did. He is a four-time Super Bowl champion. By the way, Joe Montana was Tom Brady before fucking Tom Brady even hit the league. And Tom Brady will back that shit up because Joe Montana is Tom Brady's favorite quarterback of all time, favorite football player of all time. He grew up watching the Niners. So Tom Brady will back me up on that. Now, I put Tom Brady now above Joe Montana, but Tom Brady knows where he comes from. And Tom Brady probably wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for Joe Montana. But anyways, Joe Montana is a four-time Super Bowl champion. He won Super Bowl 16, 19, 23, 24. He was the MVP of three out of four of those. He was Super Bowl MVP of 16, 23, and 24. He also has some of the most epic comebacks in Super Bowl history. I mean, it's really difficult to describe the way Joe Montana dominated the 80s, but like, you knew you could not leave a minute's worth time on the clock and think he's not driving it down the field and driving his team in for a win. He just knew how to win. That is all Joe Montana did, was win, win, motherfucking win. It's actually quite shocking that towards the end of his career with the 49ers, how often they would take him out. And they wanted Steve Young to start so bad. In between, because like I said, he won Super Bowl 16, 19, 23, and 24. So in between those, the first Super Bowl, Joe Montana would actually have a back surgery. And basically from that back surgery on, his coaches, Bill Walsh and, George Seifert, his two coaches he had as Niners career, during that time, after that back surgery, they did not trust him. They kind of felt like he had lost a step. And even though he would keep winning and keep driving and they'd keep going to the Super Bowl, they'd keep going to the playoffs, they still would try and replace him. And they would ultimately bring Steve Young in, and he would back him up for a few seasons, actually. And then eventually, there was even one of the Super Bowls that they won. I can't remember if it was 19. I think it was 23. Steve Young actually played the majority of that regular season. So it was weird. Like I said, I'm rewatching all the Super Bowls right now. And so to rewatch some of those seasons where they're actually like sitting Joe Montana at certain points, and they kept wanting to push Steve Young in. And eventually they did. And that's why he would end up with the Kansas City Chiefs. But when he went to the Chiefs, he took them to the AFC Championship game. So that's all Joe Montana did was win. No matter what he did, you know, when he was with Notre Dame in college, that's all he did was win. He comes to the NFL, that's all he does is win. He dominates the 80s, and he still had hardships. That's why you can't, even though you're the best in the league, you can't ever sit pretty and act like it's all good, even though you're winning, like Joe Montana did, because he had Steve Young breathing over his fucking shoulder. And if he even broke his fucking pinky toe, he knew they were putting Steve Young in. So Joe Montana even had to battle for his career. So here are Joe Montana's career numbers. 40,551 passing yards, 273 passing touchdowns, two-time NFL MVP in 1989 and 1990. He owns an NFL record for the most playoff touchdowns with 11 playoff touchdowns. He was Offensive Player of the Year in 1989 and three-time first-time all-team in 87, 89, and 90. And I cannot reiterate enough. No player dominated the 1980s more than Joe Montana. You couldn't even fathom a player being as touching even what Joe Montana did. And then Tom Brady, of course, not only reached what Joe Montana did, but went above it. And then we also have Patrick Mahomes now, who's kind of creeping up in that same echelon of, oh shit, he might be joining this this crew of Montana, this upper echelon of Montana and Brady. So it's going to be interesting to see how Mahomes progresses throughout his career. But to me, with Montana, like I said, he dominated. But they were doubting the shit out of him. And eventually, he would get traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, the greatest quarterback, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play the game. And at that time, he was the greatest quarterback. And Niners fans, they were not happy with Steve Young being the starter, too. I mean, even Steve Young, he had to deal with a lot of bullshit leading up to him finally winning a Super Bowl in 29. So it's just really crazy to hear those stories. But at the same time, that's why Tom Brady's entire career, you would hear him at the podium say, you have to fight for your spot to be the starter every single day. And there's no truer thing than that, because you look at Montana. Steve Young breathing over his shoulder. Same thing I mentioned when I was talking about Roger Staubach. You wouldn't think they're going to sit Roger Staubach, but his entire career, Tom Landry doubted him and was always putting him in, putting him out. No, we're not going to play you. No, we need you to be a pocket passer. So that's just the way the league is. When you hear these guys talk about battling for their job every single day, they did. And even the greats did. Even my number one, Joe Montana, got traded his ass away from the Niners. But nobody, and I reiterate, nobody dominated the 80s more than Joe Montana. So my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s are number 10, Mike Singletary, number 9, John Elway, number 8, Ronnie Lott, number 7, Reggie White, number 6, Eric Dickerson, number 5, Anthony Munoz, number 4, Marcus Allen, number 3, Lawrence Taylor, number 2, Jerry Rice, and number 1, Joe Montana. That is my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1980s. So enjoy this exciting weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.